listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 239 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me right across the table
in the flesh.
Is in the flesh, not in front of people, just you and I in a private studio here at CD Baby,
here
is Chris Robley.
Hello. Good to actually see you.
Yes. Yes. Which it's always funny when we record these in person, just you and I. It's like, how do we even do this? Because we normally use software that records it over the internet.
Does it all the work for it. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Why can't you just be at
home? I can stay home if you want.
Go in the other room.
I'm happy to stay on the East Coast. Yeah.
So, Chris, you are here in Portland in town.
I'm here. As you know, we're having many big marketing meetings at CD Baby. And then at night, I do my usual thing of going to friends' houses and recording until way too late. And then waking up and repeating.
Yep, I saw your out late recording last night.
Yep, and tonight again, a lot of fun. Making the hits happen. I just have to convince the world that they're actually hits.
It just takes time.
Yeah.
It'll happen eventually. All right, well, you know, what people on the show won't hear is that you just played me a very hilarious country song.
I don't think it's new, but the guy I was making music with last night, Peter, shared it with me. It's hilarious. People in Nashville probably have known about this for years, but it's called Parked Out by the Lake. And the only lyrics are basically, parked out by the lake. It's the lake 80 miles from Santa Fe.
Yeah.
And just keeps repeating the whole song.
Yeah. But the funny thing is that makes it funny, because you were playing it for me, and I'm like halfway through, I'm like, is this a joke?
Yeah, it takes a little while before you're like, oh.
Because it's. I'm like, man, this is kind of working, even though the only lyric is I'm parked out by the lake 80 miles from Santa Fe.
Yeah.
For the verse over and over and the chorus.
Thing I thought was so amazing about it is you can take it like just like stupid teenage humor, like these guys are just pranking. Or you could like read into it. Oh, it's this commentary on how actually lyrics don't matter that much. And the emotional content is all filled in with the music and the vocal delivery. Or it's some other kind of commentary about how stupid country lyrics are. I don't think that's what he meant to do.
This is deep. Yeah. I thought it was just a joke. No, I'm going to have to spend the rest of my day thinking about it.
And then, you know, what you'll find out now that you've heard the song is it's going to stay in your head all day long.
Well, the funny thing when you first played it for me before I knew it was a joke was I immediately thought of, like, it is hilarious how often in country music they tell you the location of where they're at.
And in this,
so in that and of itself, it was to me. But where in hip hop, they constantly tell you who they are.
So, yeah, check it out. We should put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. All right, well, in today's episode, we've already told you where we're at. We're in Portland in the studio. We're not by a lake.
Right, or by a river.
We are by a river.
A massive river, yes.
But in today's episode, we are going to be discussing seven key things we learned at this year's DIY Musician Conference. And I think whether or not you were there, these things will be applicable. But whenever you get that many artists together and that many people talking about moving their music career forward, a lot of key things pop out at you, and that's what we're going to discuss today. And then later on in the show, we have some emails and a phone call where someone tells us we're crap.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear that one.
So you're going to want to stick around for that.
Interesting. Okay. I look forward to being criticized.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not an invitation to listeners to just suddenly turn on us, but...
Correct. We're not inviting criticism. No. We can accept criticism, but we're not looking for it.
It's a good distinction.
But stick around in the show. You'll want to hear that call. And just a reminder, we don't say it enough on the show, but for the best in music distribution, monetization, and promotion tools, head over to cdbaby.com. If you want the best, that's where you need to go.
Yeah.
If you want to get paid, that's where you need to go.
Paying Artists Weekly for 21 years.
And I know people out there are like, but so-and-so doesn't take any of my money. And that means they don't care about how much money you get paid. They don't care that your music's sitting in conflict on YouTube and that they don't have the negotiating power to get you better rates, because what do they care? But we do.
We do.
and we want to get you paid because we don't get paid unless you get paid. So the best, CDBaby.com.
It's an ad, but it's also true.
It's also true. Is it an ad if it's just truth?
Yeah, I can still, yeah. But hey, you know what? It's our podcast.
That's right. So yeah, we can do what we want. All right. So we are going to be discussing 7 key things we learned at this year's conference. And, you know, like I said, some of it is content-based. Some of it is things like you just get a bunch of people together that are talking about the same thing, and themes emerge. And so let's just dive right into this.
Yeah, so one theme that I realized kind of as it was happening and as once the event was over, I was like, wow, there was a lot of focus on international, not just from the content perspective and the speakers that we had asked to be a part of it, but artists were really focused on, like, I met one band that was had gotten back from a tour in Brazil that went really well, and they're like, we got to figure out how to get back there, how to take that to the next place. They're an American band. Another artist was super, focused on getting their music into the Asian marketplace, and so there was a lot of awareness now that your music is everywhere and your music is international. It's a huge world out there. It's not just the U.S. and U.K. and English-speaking territories. And then when our international reps at CD Baby did their panel, it was very well attended. I think they were swamped with questions, so I found that heartening.
Yeah, for those of you that maybe don't have a lot of historical background about the major music industry, for many, many years, it was very much U.S. and U.K. based. That was where all the major records came from. Yes, there was artists from other parts of the world, like Australia and Canada, but the marketplace that was really driving it was really the U.S. and U.K. marketplace. But what's happened over the last, 10 or so years is that new markets have emerged, and especially in a streaming market. This may surprise a lot of our listeners, Chris, but the U.S. was not the first territory in on streaming. In fact, we're kind of a laggard compared to other territories. And what has happened is a lot of places like Brazil is a huge music market that's a country that's been developing, and a lot of people didn't have personal computers. So the download era really didn't mean much.
Skipped right over it.
Yeah,
much.
But then streaming services in a lot of these territories are bundled in with their phones. And so they jumped right into streaming, and it opened up a lot of music consumption and the idea of, as artists, that we can get our music on these platforms. And so a lot has emerged around the world where there's these big markets of fans and big markets of artists that weren't served by the traditional industry that was based out of the U.S. and U.K. mostly. And so there's lots of opportunity. I was just in Mexico City a couple weeks before our conference, and I met this artist, and they were amazing. And they had moved from California to Mexico City.
Wow.
Because there was so much opportunity there for them. They were singing in English, but they also did some music in Spanish. But the stuff they were doing just was like regular pop music, mm-hmm. And so I think artists should start considering the whole world. A lot of, I've been around the world and I've talked to a lot of artists who are like, I just got to get to the U.S. I got to get to the U.S. I'm like, there's opportunity in other places that may be easier to get than trying to go to the crowded market.
Right.
So, Mexico City, one of the largest cities in the world, bigger than any city in America, and artists are moving there. And I'm like, there could be, that might be the place for your music where you can reach an audience and see success or other places around the world. But the idea that U.S.-centric thinking, I think, is bad thinking if you're an artist.
Yeah, and particularly as CD Baby's, making partnerships with companies in India and in China and wherever else, like these massive nations that have a billion people or more. Not that just you flip a switch and suddenly your music's there and all billion Indian citizens are going to love your music, but it's a opening of a huge opportunity.
Yeah, a lot of these territories like China and India, they haven't had access to as much music, especially with streaming, where you can just access everything and try a lot of things and sample a lot of things. You might start seeing more activity from your music in those areas. So it's just something to continue to be aware of. Inside your CD Baby account, there's trending data that shows where fans are and where people are listening to your music. I think it's more important than ever to keep looking at that. I wouldn't say you need to fixate on it. And a lot of times artists can just fixate on data.
Right.
Sit there and keep hitting refresh. I don't think you need to fixate on it, but I think you need to be informed, like, where are my fans? Maybe the reason why I'm having a hard time booking this tour here is because all my fans are somewhere else. Or maybe it's an opportunity, like you said, Brazil. Brazil loves rock and roll. If you're a rock band.
And this band that I was talking to, they were sort of an industrial rock band meets like cowboy, outlaw country kind of thing. And they also have a full-length movie that plays behind them. It was a show.
Yeah.
But they were excited about getting back to Brazil, and we had our reps there to kind of field questions, and reps from all over the world.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely an international mindset that the opportunity for your music might be elsewhere, or, your fans might be elsewhere.
Yeah. Should I do number two?
Yeah, let's
okay,
do
I'll,
number two.
I'll roll on with these numbers. So the second thing I was realizing is that it's really vital for artists today to keep up with or master tech tools, recording tools that make it efficient and affordable for them to have a kind of a high volume of output for songs. Because, you know, we say this a lot, we're in the streaming age, streaming platforms reward frequent release schedules. And if that's how we're, you know, functioning these days for music consumption, then you really can't just be saving up $20,000 to go make a big giant record, disappear for a long time, and then be broke forever because you spent a ton of money on a big studio or whatever. So finding ways to streamline that process, make it, whether it's home recording or you know, collaborating over Dropbox or whatever, there's a lot of ways where you can increase your output but not go broke doing it. And I think it's important for people to find out what those options are.
Yeah, I was just reading about a tool or an app. I'm not going to say the name because I have not used it and don't know if it's reputable or good, but the concept was interesting, but it was just the whole app was based around helping, you know, artists collaborate with each other. I don't think that made our list, but I think that was another theme that I heard quite a few times. My interview with Questlove, he mentioned collaboration, and in his book, he talks a lot about collaboration. But there was this app that allows you to collaborate, whether it's songwriting or recording with other people who are looking for that kind of thing. And I think that's going to be more and more common, those kind of things that help you just be more productive mm-hmm. on the cheap.
Yeah, and I think in our last episode that we recorded at the conference about crowdfunding, I mean, we were doing a lot of griping about it, but it seemed to be like we're just past that time where you can... Yeah, I don't like where people think, oh, of course you need $20,000. Let's help you get that money so you can go make a record. It's like,
yeah,
we're done with that. And now it's like people want a song a month or a song every 3 months or whatever, and you got to crank it out. So I'm sorry to people who want to toil away on their masterpieces, but
there's still room for that.
Yeah, I do that. I do that too. It's just,
how many songs have you recorded and not released?
Quite a few.
Well, no, I think it's kind of in the marketing world and even in the development world for like, computer development world I'm talking about, in software world, it's like the idea of like fail faster.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like,
right.
Get music out there and find out what's working and then, you know, spend some time tweaking and learning about yourself, getting better before you go make that big investment. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to an artist recently, a horror story that they just spent $12,000 on an album that they hate. And I'm like, ouch.
Is this a different person than the one I think you're talking
about? No, probably.
Okay.
And
let me just say my condolences to you if you're listening.
And that's one of those things where you're like, ouch, that hurts. You could have spent $500, made a song, learned a lot, and then got it out there, got feedback from people, mm-hmm. and it's also been like a year behind schedule too. So that's where I think the tools, recording software, the ability to collaborate, the ability to access professionals that have lots of experience on the cheap as well over the internet, being able to say, hey, famous mastering engineer, you know, will you master this? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people like that are mixing and mastering for independent artists just to fill their schedule, so...
Yeah, it's. I guess the way that I was just thinking of this is that there are real risks to having longer, more ambitious projects like that, and they are financial, of course, but also you run the risk of disappearing for too long and losing the attention of your fans, and then you run the risk of losing enthusiasm for your own work, because you, again, you sit on it for so long. By the time it comes out, you hate it. You're sick to death of it. You want to move on. So yeah, fail faster.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and there's lots of, like you were saying, new recording tech tools that just, and they're just so much more affordable. That's mm-hmm. like most of the last few Small Town Puts albums we've done and the music we're working on now, I can feasibly record all the guitar tracks at home mm-hmm. for free.
Right.
And it's not like I bought tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment. What I'm using probably cost me $1,000 total, you know,
and you can
including
use
the mic and interface.
And that'll last you a decade or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the next thing I was thinking, number three on this list, is that DMC was there, and he proved, I think, to everyone in attendance that it's really all about heart and personality, authenticity, vulnerability, all that good, goopy, touchy-feely stuff. Like, yes, it's exciting to learn about whatever, some marketing strategy or whatever, how this tech tool works. The details are fine, but, like, it's just so refreshing to be reminded that the creative spirit is what is the most important thing, first and last.
Well, and also that music has a serious impact on people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah, I almost cried / did cry, you know, three times during DMC's talk.
Yeah, I cried. That and Gina Chavez's talk, I cried for that one too.
Yeah, they were both so great. Like
that, her whole presentation, like the title of it was something about, I forget what the title of her session was, but it had something to do with heart. Like
mm-hmm.
basically the whole thing being, if you want to connect and be an artist that is authentic, that writing from your heart is where that's going to come from. If you're writing about stuff that you don't care about, then it's not going to have that emotional weight to it.
Yeah. And for those who weren't there, DMC, I don't know if I can summarize his talk at all. But he basically led us through kind of the early history of hip hop and then where his place in that fell. And then how all that fame and acclaim and money didn't lead him to happiness or a sense of his true self. And so he became depressed, you know, suicidally depressed, and then miraculously found hope and connection in the music of Sarah McLachlan. And she saved his life, basically.
For an entire year, that's all he would listen to.
Yeah, much to the dismay of his, everyone his cohorts. Yeah, and so then, not only that, but there were also kind of side alleys to this story where he talked about people telling him that his music had saved their life. And then he has this connection with Sarah McLachlan's music that saves him, and then he gets to meet her later. That's a very boring summation of an amazing story, but it just comes back to that's what music's for.
Yeah.
So I was very moved.
Yeah, I think as artists, it's a good reminder. I can say for the folks inside this building, we truly value all artists of all shapes and sizes and success levels, whether it's just I'm doing this because I've got something that I've got to get out of me. I applaud that. I also applaud the artist that's figured out how to connect with an audience and sell thousands and thousands of albums and millions of streams. And I think that's amazing as well. I don't look at it going, oh, that person, their musical expression has more value. I mean, they both have value to them as individuals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Other people might connect with it more, but we definitely look at artists as, at its core, that's what it's about. The idea of, like, anyone can create because they've got it inside them, and there shouldn't be anyone telling them, no, you're not good enough. Because at the end of the day, part of it's not about whether or not I'm good enough. It's because I've got this thing inside of me I just need to say and get out.
Right, and music snobs that are listening will hate this, but I think that the creation of music has intrinsic worth, and the value is not provided by an external marketplace or by how many followers you have or fans you have. Like, it's valid, it's worthwhile. And yes, then there's a sort of external value that does get applied by how well it does in various regards,
yeah.
But the creation itself is the most important thing.
So. Yeah, and that theme showed up with Gina Chavez, it showed up with DMC. I can't remember if it showed up in my interview with Questlove because I know it was in his audiobook. I'd been listening to his audiobook for like 3 days leading up to that, and so some of it kind of blurs together.
Also, I get the sense that you blacked out during that. Yeah, you have no memory of what happened.
No memory of what happened. That,
well, I was there listening to that, your interview with him, and I think for him, I don't know if he went so much into the intrinsic value of creation in and of itself, but he definitely focused on creation within a community.
Yeah.
So there was some of that.
Yeah. You know, yeah. He did.
Your network and family of creators. That was kind of his angle on it.
In his book, Creative Quest, he very much emphasizes the idea of just creating that if you don't even just start there, that you're creating for yourself because it does something for you. He kind of elevates that as the most essential thing.
Right.
So.
Well, number four on the list is niche is the new stardom. And what I mean by that, I had a very refreshing time at this conference because I didn't get the sense that there was, you know, 1,500 super hungry, desperate artists. It seems like, and not to say that that's been a theme in the past, but there's been elements of that. There's always people in the crowd that are like desperate for fame. And I felt a shift this year where it seemed like almost everyone understood I'm not shooting to be a megastar. I'm shooting to, you know, kind of carve out my expertise or my voice or recognition within this much smaller world. And I just thought that was so cool, very healthy. I think it makes for more interesting art when people are not gunning to be the next whatever is already popular, but they're working in these more unique ways.
And by smaller world, you don't mean by necessarily the number of people, but more of like focus on who the audience is.
Focus on who the audience is and focus on...
instead of being a mega pop star on American Idol where the whole world knows me.
And focus also not just on their vision of what their audience is, but on a particular version of themselves and their music that isn't... I don't know, how do I say this? They're focusing on themselves. They're not necessarily saying, how do I be like Taylor Swift or how do I be like whatever. It's more like, how do I be me?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a blanket statement to say that everyone at the conference had that mindset, but I felt it to a greater degree.
No, I agree. I've been to other conferences where it very much was this felt, even spoken, like, how do I become famous?
Mm-hmm.
How do I...
And what is the point of that? Who are you?
How do I get to the head of Sony so he'll sign me and make me famous? And I've literally had those conversations with people recently at other places. I'm like, what is wrong with you? What world are you in?
What value does that have if you haven't defined who you want to be? Like, what worth? I guess we say this a lot, but do you really want to get famous not being yourself and then be stuck with that? I mean, maybe.
I'm still trying to figure out myself. Yeah, so maybe that's better.
And speaking of country songs, I heard one last night where it was like, money doesn't buy you happiness, but it'll buy me a boat.
That he could park by the lake.
Yeah, right.
That's funny. Number five. Are we done with number four?
Yeah, well, I think we're good.
You know, and I think you said when we were talking about this yesterday, you said something about you're not going to go viral. And what we mean by that is that remember the days of like Chocolate Rain?
2005 to 2007 were the golden days of YouTube.
Rebecca Black, Friday. Yes, there's videos that can do well. And, you know, typically things that I see going viral in quotes these days involve a cat and some sort of gif, you know, with
which
a cat.
Which is my latest music video.
Yes, it is.
Cat gifs.
So, and all the platforms and things have so many different algorithms dictating what people say that the idea of just like, oh, we're going to make viral videos and just reach everybody, it's that doesn't exist anymore. So it's like the idea of focus and targeting a specific audience tends to do better. So. Mm-hmm.
Number five, you were about to say, I thought it was funny yesterday as we were brainstorming takeaways. We basically both said this at the same time, and that's that showing up is a big step. It's the most important thing, and you should probably describe what you mean by showing up.
Yeah, and by showing up, I'm not necessarily talking about coming to our conference, although you should show up. But really, the idea of an artist showing up, like taking advantage of opportunities and putting yourself on the line. I mean, it's it's frightening. It's easy to sit back and go, oh, why won't someone make me famous or do this for me? But actually getting out there, and whether it's stepping on a stage or playing a track for somebody or just talking to that person, whether it's another artist that's in your scene that's like, hey, it'd be great if we collaborated, or but you have to be vulnerable sometimes when you're showing up, and that's hard. And where I saw this play out at our conference was we had a music supervisor Shark Tank session. So it was, you know, the idea of like they're putting on songs and the music supervisors are just, you know, going at it like.
And they're literally picking from a hat where attendees show up and put their USB drives in, right?
At the beginning.
Did you already say that?
I don't think so.
So it's really random.
Yeah, random. So yeah, it's not pre-selected. It's not something that's been curated a little bit already. Completely random. And they put it in. And so like Shark Tank, like it's like the music supervisors, if they like it, they're all like, I want this track or I want this track, you know. And there are some tracks that nobody wanted. But what surprised me is the quality of the tracks was far superior than I expected from just the random, uncurated nature of it. Mm-hmm. Gary Earle, who ran the session, said, that's the most tracks that I've ever seen, because he had done this session multiple places. That's the most tracks I've ever seen the music supervisors want.
Huh.
And I thought, that's interesting. That's really cool. And one of the songs I heard was really good, very syncable. And so then a few days later, one of the music supervisors tagged me on something on Instagram, and I looked, and she was talking about how she was blown away by the tracks she got and couldn't wait to place them in shows that she was working on. Huh. And I just thought, man, so many people, they just don't participate, and they lose out on opportunity. Sure, there was a lot of tracks that didn't get picked, but there was a lot of people that just randomly suddenly made an amazing connection with a music supervisor that's probably going to result in a sync because of the experience that they had with the music, and how for them it's kind of a surprise and they get excited about it and they want to use it. And, you know.
And the thing that made the difference is that simple but difficult step of just being like, you know what, I'm going to get over my fear and just put my USB drive in that hat or whatever. I'm going to step on that stage or anything. That simply showing up is the first and sometimes most important step, and definitely I get it. Like, it's terrifying to feel like you're going to be judged and criticized and vulnerable in front of everyone, and these sync experts could be like, there's no hook or whatever. Like, whatever criticism
they
might have.
Or I wouldn't use this. That's the thing. I mean, that sounds terrifying to me. Like, putting a song on a USB and everyone knowing that they're not just casually listening. They're all judging it right then. And you're like... That's like judging my heart and soul right there. Yeah. It's tough.
Well, the story that made me think of that same point of just showing up is so important is, what's his name? Is it Henry in the Invisibles?
Yes.
So we met this guy who came to the conference who...
he listens to the podcast.
Hello, Henry. So he came to our live taping of the podcast, introduced himself, and then I think later we hung out with him at the open mic, and that's all just sort of personal stuff that was nice to just meet this guy and kind of figure out what he's doing. But it also, I started to realize he's the type of person who's putting himself out there to say hello and to you know, make a connection. And then on the final day of the conference, our friend Christina, who works here, was asked to be a part of the judging group for Spire Studios' recording competition. So Spire Studio was there. They set up a mobile recording thing, and they had this competition. Anyways, she was like, I heard this amazing track. This is the one I picked to be the winner. And then, anyways, it's him. He put himself out there. He signed up for this competition. He went and recorded a track. It rocked, like... She picked him as the winner, and then you announced him from the stage. He went home with, I don't know, what, $2,500
worth of gear that went with him. Not just like, oh, here's some vouchers. It was like, here's all the gear that was used in that studio. It's now yours.
Yeah, it was like all his recording gear. I think he had a bass guitar. Yeah. Just tons of stuff. And like, again, like, no, not every attendee is going to be the prize winner. There's only one person who won that particular, ultimate prize package or something. But like... It's just an example of he was like, oh, there's an opportunity. I'm going to go sign up for it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it was really cool because not only did he win, but I'm sure a lot of people were like, who is this guy? I need to go hear his music. He just won this thing.
And everyone who lost me, like, who is this jerk? He sucks, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, we are musicians. We're moody.
Right.
Yeah, I think ultimately with just looking back with... I often come back to this point a lot when I'm just talking to artists in general, because I look at when I went to college in Nashville. I had only been playing guitar a couple years, and my eyes were opened to how long of a road I had ahead of me to get to be, have some experience and things that some of these people came, you know, to Nashville having already recorded on hit records and stuff like that. And you're like, oh my gosh, this world is much bigger than I ever imagined, and the talent level is far higher than I ever imagined. And what was shocking to me is how many of these people that were so talented just would give up and not show up. Mm-hmm. And it'd be like it didn't happen for them overnight, so they'd go back to wherever they came from. And I just couldn't believe it. And mm-hmm. I thought, for a lot of the success I had, it was just because I continued to show up. And I put myself out there a lot in some situations where I look back and go, what was I thinking? But I was hungry, and I just kept showing up. And eventually, doors opened up and things happened.
Yeah. Well, we could veer into self-help cliche here, but the opening yourself up to those things where you're sort of out of your depth, you're either going to get inspired and learn and get better, or the failure will be instructive in that it'll close a door that's probably good to close. Like, okay, I'm not going to be that kind of musician or that whatever, but now I'm closer to understanding what I can be.
Yeah.
So another thing, fail, put yourself out there, fail faster. what do we have for number six? Oh, number six is you got to understand that marketing is really about, it needs to be about your audience and a journey with them and a connection with them. And I think a lot of times marketing is seen as this thing of grabbing attention. Like, how do I get their attention and focus it all on me so I can get something? And there was a lot of emphasis on the conference, both in the Indiepreneur track, which they did three back-to-back sessions, a lot of Simon Tam's instruction. It was very much keeping the audience's needs front and center.
Yeah, and we talk about that on the podcast some, but it's one of those things that probably can't be said enough, because even in marketing in our day job, it's real easy to start thinking about what do we want people
to do for us.
To do for us or think about us, as opposed to how can we be a service to them. And as you're, you know, you've got fans or people that you're wanting to take interest in your music, it's like, how can your music and how can you talk about your music or position your music and do things that makes it about them and what they experience, mm-hmm. and not just about buy my music or stream my music or go to my show. And sometimes that doesn't mean it has to be, can't be funny and humorous. They can have lots of humor and be funny, and even, you know, obviously it's got to point back to you at some point. But the idea that that initial ask or the initial messaging being thinking more about what do those people want? What do they want to experience?
Yeah, and I thought Simon Tam had this really good bit of instruction where he was basically saying, this was a little bit more about finding your niche as an artist, but he said, think of five things about yourself. And about your interests or about your music, whatever, that you think other people will absolutely hate. And he's like, there you go. That's your niche. Like, play those up, dive into those. And it was not, you know, it was more about be true to yourself in the way that you're not worried about a mass appeal. Mm-hmm. And instead, you will absolutely drill in on the needs of your kind of core audience.
Yeah.
And so then I think through that exercise, it was, okay, now that you know who your niche audience is, marketing can be more naturally just a connective thing and not so much about gimme, 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 because you've off the bat sort of isolated your audience from the rest of the world.
Yeah, I think a lot of times it's finding those areas of commonality, mm-hmm. and then going, oh, these are my people.
Yeah.
They'll probably like my music.
Right.
And you see that a lot in certain genres or subgenres where it's like a lot of times... That even happened for Simon Tam with their band after their whole Supreme Court thing. Mm-hmm. They ended up playing it a lot of lawyer stuff because there was this storyline that really spoke to lawyers, like that was this cool thing about the band, you know?
Yeah. That dude's good at finding opportunities that are like totally unique. Like, you know, they started with the anime conventions and then suddenly like they had the legal case and now it's legal conventions, which I'm sure pay a lot better than the anime conventions.
They pay a lot better, but I don't know. Do they ever loosen up?
I'm imagining lawyers being super buttoned up all day, and then when the rock band comes on, they go nuts.
They go nuts like, oh, all right, boy. All right, settle down. Settle down. We let him out.
Yeah. We'll have to ask him. Let us know.
Yeah. Speaking of that session, and all the sessions from the conference, or many of them, we did record audio. I have not gone through the audio yet, but I do plan. Simon Tam's session is one that I plan on getting down the podcast feed soon. It just haven't had a chance to comb through it all yet.
We got stuff to do. It's only.
I had some recovery time.
Yeah, I went on vacation for a week afterwards. So number seven. This might sound like a ridiculous thing to walk away as a takeaway, but musicians are just awesome. They are fun to hang out with. They're generally very open-hearted, generous people, really into sharing ideas and asking questions. And I think we take that for granted because we live in this world or we surround ourselves with other musicians. But if you've been, if you have a day job that's in a different field, or I have, written content for other industries where I can say, even amongst creative industries, people aren't as cool as musicians.
No, they are not.
So be thankful you're one of us, or we're one of you. Be thankful we're us.
We're us. It is one of those things that we've talked about on the podcast, that every year going to the conference, one of the best things about it is just being with that many other musicians. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like-minded individuals. Because, you know, I go to business conferences and I've been to marketing conferences, and it's like the content might be good, but it's just not the same of like hanging out with a bunch of musicians that usually know how to have fun, are creative, can go with the flow. I don't know. It's just fun to be with.
Yeah. Well, I love the first night of the conference. I came back super late to the hotel from wherever. I guess we were at the open mic probably, but... And there was this little jam session in the lobby. And then, you know, the second night, there's another jam session. And then by the last night, I'm like, oh, these people, like, are friends now. They formed, like, their own little community out of this. And there's similar groups of people who have returned to the conference year after year who, you know, now they're like a family.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I think that's good to renew our sense of enthusiasm about who we are as a community.
Yeah, it's a very diverse community. Lots of people from all over the world, all sorts of backgrounds and musical styles, but it just seems like musicians can get over all those differences and find commonality quicker than other groups of people can.
Totally.
Yeah.
We get what it's like to strive and struggle and
be ignored and discarded.
Just while to put everything you can into this thing that...
to question your identity daily.
Yeah. But we get to do it together.
Then we get to do it together.
It's worth doing.
If we get back together, we give each other a hug, and we go see you next year.
Yeah.
No, it is good. It is amazing and renewing to just have that experience.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, with artists, and when people ask me about like going to the conference, one of the benefits, and you know, a lot of times they're like, "Am I going to learn this? Am I going to learn that?" I'm like, yes, but just come, because it's hard to say in like a marketing catchphrase how it feels to be there with that many musicians and just have a bigger sense of purpose for why you're even doing it in the first place.
It is tough to define and quantify in a way, because I was thinking, if we took every session that happened and had video, you know, great video and audio for every single session that happened, we put it online for free, people would still be missing out on, I don't know to what percentage what they're missing out on is as important as the content. But to me, it feels maybe almost as important as the content of the experience of being there together, and the meeting, the exchange of ideas that happens amongst the attendees is so valuable.
The energy you feel.
Yeah. But it's tough to be like, well, that's worth $99, or that's worth $5,000, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's tough to put cash value on that.
Yeah. Well, like you said, if we just put it online, it just becomes information at that point, where when you're there, it's an experience.
Right.
So that was number 7.
Yeah. We're all out of ideas.
We're done.
Until next time. Let's just get criticized now. You said
we have a call? Yeah. Well, before we get to that, we will be doing the DIY Musician Conference again in Austin next year. It will be August 28th through 30th. You can go to DIYMusicianCon.com for details. I don't think we have all the details up there yet other than the date, and it'll be in the same location. But be watching and listening for more info on that when we have tickets going on sale, which we will have early bird tickets going on sale in the not-too-distant future. And, you know, I think it's very important and helpful and encouraging and just energizes your career to show up and be there and take part and just get renewed and energized and walk away with a bunch of good information to help you reach new heights with your music in the days and years that follow. So,
on that point, are we clear to announce the timeline of the Valencia conference? Because I know we have European listeners that sometimes sort of try to plan.
Yeah, the Valencia conference, I don't have the dates in front of me. It's going to be the last weekend in May, I believe.
I wanted to just make sure we get that in there because it's different from the last 2 years, which has been in April. So
yeah, it's going to be in May. I think in the U.S. it will be Memorial Day weekend, but they don't.
The weather's going to be even nicer.
Chris, did you know this in Europe? They don't celebrate American holidays.
That is odd. Well, we'll go and we'll celebrate there.
The weather will be unbelievable in Valencia in May. In April, when we've had it, it could be mixed. It's not super hot. It has been, you know, some nice, warm, sunny days, but we've also had rain. In May, you won't want to leave.
Yeah.
Unless you hate sunshine, nice weather, goodness,
great
good food.
Right.
If you hate all those things.
Wine.
If you like sitting in a dark cave crying and being upset, then don't go to Valencia in May. Because that's what won't be that. Yeah, so that's when we'll have some official messaging about that, but that's when it's going to be that weekend. We just need to coordinate with Berkeley on like announcing it and doing a press release about it, but it should be a good time as always. Yeah. So yeah, you can hit Valencia in May, hit Austin in August.
And speaking of people who actually do that, we should say hello to Brian. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Both Brian, conferences again.
I think he's been to all 7.
Wow.
That's commitment.
We need to give him a trophy.
Actually, you know what? I think he said he missed 1 year in Chicago. I can't remember. Hmm. I'm sure he'll correct me. But yeah, if you had any takeaways from the conference or want to weigh in on any topic, we'd love to hear it. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And speaking of listener feedback, let's get into it.
Right.
You know what? I think I'm going to start. We only have one call, and we've got 2 emails. So I'm going to start with an email.
Okay.
They'll put the call in the
middle.
Yeah. All right. Hey, guys. I recently discovered your podcast and have been binge listening to it for weeks now. Thank you so much for all the great information. Back in May, you covered coming up with your band name, something I've been struggling with for a while. I want to put out my first album this year as a solo artist. My genre is indie folk, though I'm hoping to move more into indie rock with future songs. It seems traditional with female singer-songwriters, especially indie, to use their own name. However, I am also a writer and have a novel out under my own name and don't know that I want to mix the two. Also, I am planning on going to graduate school in a year to become a therapist. And who wants their therapist to also be an indie recording artist?
Me.
Maybe a few do, but again, I'd like to keep those hats separate. I'd love your advice. My name is Mercy Strongheart. My middle name is Blue Sky That Never Darkens. And in parentheses, it says hippie parents. I've considered variations like Mercy Blue or Mercy Sky or M. Strongheart. I want to avoid sounding like a Christian artist, no offense, because I'm not, and I don't want to sound hippy-dippy. I'm not opposed to a totally different name. I love names like St. Vincent, LP, Cat Power, and Aldous Harding. But honestly, most of my early fan base will be people who know me, and I want them to know it's me. I've thought about Sky Blue Sky, an homage to Wilco, and also a cool name. Here's a link, and she gave a link to check out the music. Does anything in there jump out at you? Sorry for the long email. I tried to keep it short. Thanks again for all you do. You guys are great. Warmly, Mercy.
Okay, I have a lot of thoughts.
I will say that Mercy Strongheart, I could get her concern that people think that she's a Christian artist. Like,
I can see both the Christian comparison and the sort of Native American being incorrectly pigeonholed or whatever as those things.
I love the idea of using her middle name as an album title, Blue Sky That Never Darkens.
That's what I thought too. When that, I was like, oh, that's really evocative. And I don't know if the band name is Sky Never Darkens or something like that. But I did like that. I was not as concerned with her name being identical between her author endeavors and her musical endeavors. I can understand the trepidation around the professional thing with the counseling, but even then, I mean, honestly, I'd be like, oh, cool, my therapist's a musician. But maybe I'm weird.
Well, maybe she's concerned that you Google your therapist and you hear their music and you're like, oh, this person's really messed up.
Right. I'm taking advice. And, yeah. It's like going to Hannibal Lecter for counseling.
I'm not saying that she's messed up. I'm just saying that I could see that as a therapist, you wanting to keep those paths separate.
Maybe the idea is you just do find a new moniker and then try to stick with that for the rest of your life, but just make it a good one.
Yeah, I like M. Strongheart. I don't have a problem with Mercy Strongheart either. I don't know where her concern of people confusing it as a Christian artist is coming from. Like, if she's in that community and doesn't want people to think, oh, you said Mercy, so there you
go. Right.
Because if you aren't in that community, I wouldn't see it in think that instantly. However, if you are in the Christian community and doing music, people might start to think, oh, you're obviously doing Christian music because your name's Mercy.
Yeah, when she mentioned Cat Power and who was the other one? St. Vincent. That to me is, very sort of kind of an indie rock thing, which makes me think she should come up with some, like a moniker like those names.
Yeah, if you're wanting to go more indie rock, I like M. Strongheart. I think that's cool.
I'm not sold on that one.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know. All right.
I think because Strongheart sounds to me, that's her real name, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds to me like the type of name someone would choose that's not their real name because they want to make some kind of prideful or overly optimistic statement about themselves. And based on the influences, I doubt the music sounds like that. But anyways, I could be making assumptions.
True.
Let us know what you'd come up
with. I love Blue Sky That Never Darkens.
Me too.
I wish that was my middle name.
Yeah.
It's a great conversation starter.
Great for as an album title. Could be a band name.
Yeah.
A little long, but
yeah. Yeah, it is long for a band name, but in 10 years, all the band names are going to have to be that long because the names are going to be taken.
Just have a serial number for our
physical
identity.
Yeah. Well, I don't feel like we gave her any conclusions.
No, we just thought out loud.
The only concrete thing that we've said here is that, at least I said, that if she's not in the Christian community, I wouldn't perceive it as Mercy Strongheart as being Christian. Mm. I wouldn't instantly make that connection.
Okay.
That's the only concrete thing I can say about it.
All right.
But I don't know beyond that.
This is why you turn to us, listeners, because we don't know.
We don't know. If anyone else has ideas and would like to share with Mercy, we'd be happy to relay them on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't like M. Strongheart, but I get your reasoning.
Yeah, it seems too
pretentious.
Not pretentious, fake positive, like
or just
like,
too much emphasis, like Strongheart.
Strongheart, like and that's a name I'm choosing, by the way. It doesn't sound like that would be her real name, so you can blame your hippie parents for the false impression that's being created.
Well, I don't know that her hippie parents picked her last name.
Well, that could be true.
Yeah. they just played into it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, we're 0-for-1 on this one. All right, we've got a call.
Oh, I'm going to put my armor on because this is the critique, right?
Hey, this is Mark Gunn. I am a Celtic Geek musician, and I love the show, and I love the title of your Crowdfunding is Dead podcast, but no offense, the content was crap. It felt like you had failed campaigns and never tried to learn how to improve. I've crowdfunded at least 10 albums and had varying degrees of success, and you have some good points. Like, if you have a fan base, there's probably no point in crowdfunding. That said, here are 5 actual quick tips on how to crowdfund successfully. Number 1, decide if you want to test an idea or help fund an album you are going to make. That's a difference between Kickstarter and Indiegogo. At a Kickstarter, you have to set a level, and you can set it low, but if you don't meet that goal, you're not going to get the money. Indiegogo doesn't matter. You're going to get the money no matter what. So it's a great idea to do. Number 2, rewards are tricky, so spend some time thinking about good ones. CDs, shirts, pins, whatever it may be. Yes, I know many people aren't buying CDs, but the people who actually want to support your campaign will probably buy one of these items. Now, you can get progressively better deals as well. And number 3, simplify the pricing. $25 for a CD, $50 get a CD and a shirt, $100 get a CD, shirt, pin, and some other good stuff. Just simplify it. Number 4, social media promotion is dumb. I know you are talking about spending so much time on social media. Don't waste your time. Instead, focus on creating great content and using that great content to promote your project. Try a weekly podcast or video or publish even more often than that. Just create something good, entertaining, that people are going to want to embrace with. And then number 5, instead of using social media to build up your mail, instead of using social media that way, use social media to build up your mailing list. You'll garner qualified people who want to hear what your campaign is about, and then you can email them as much as you want to promote the project from there. So Laser from the DoubleClicks just kickstarted a book about crowdfunding for musicians, and I want to recommend that. That is over at kickstarter.com, and I think you can find it. Just do a search for the DoubleClicks crowdfunding for musicians. You'll find it. But these are a few quick tips. Hopefully, I know there's a lot more to it than that. You do think about, you know, shipping and all that stuff. But I wanted to give some actual tips for crowdfunding, which your podcast did not do. Thanks so much, guys. I love everything you do. You can find me at KeltFather.net. Thank you.
All right, Mark. Thanks for the call.
Ouch. But not really.
I don't think he actually listened to the episode.
Yeah, well, yeah, because first of all, we were successful with our campaign.
Yeah.
And still said, hell no.
Yeah. And also, our session wasn't about how to crowdfund. It was
how to never do it again.
And some of the points he made were some of the points we made in the thing. So
I think I said at some point in the conversation that basically, yeah, we're talking all this smack about this, but if it's working for you, keep doing it. Fine. That's great. But I think you're insane, but who am I to say?
Yeah. So clearly it's working for Mark.
Yeah.
He said like 10 successful crowdfunded campaigns. What really the lens that we were looking through when talking about that, here at CD Baby, there's like 800,000 artists that use our services. That's a lot of artists. You see a lot of trends and patterns that may not be visible. So we see a lot of trends. And basically, the trend we were addressing is that we see it all the time where artists say, hey, I'm starting out. I guess I got to do a crowdfunded thing because that's what you're supposed to do. And that's what we were trying to say. No, that's not what you're supposed to just do because you're getting into something you're not understanding what it is. Mm-hmm. Clearly, in this situation, Mark is understanding what it is and is doing a good job at it. So therefore, go for it. But there was also, it was around 2009, 2010, where all the press was like, crowdfunding is the future of how music and creativity happens. And so that just turned out not to be true.
Yeah. And it seemed to be that some of the things he was using as advice, I think we did mention a few of those, but the one that where he said, like, use social as a means of building your email list because that gives you the direct connection. I mean, I think that's an important kind of just marketing endeavor to be doing, either on a regular basis or semi-regular campaigns around that. But I'm not sure that I don't know if this was his suggestion, but I wouldn't want to be focusing on that kind of marketing campaign at the same time as I'm doing a crowdfunding campaign, because I think doing the crowdfunding campaign itself is already a kind of distraction from the main project.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if he was saying just sort of do that in advance of any crowdfunding campaign, but...
And of course we say use email. That's what we always say, because he was made it sound like we poo-pooed email. Right. I would never poo-poo email.
No.
And our whole crowdfunding campaign for Small Town Post was based on exclusive content. That's kind of the main thing, because we used Pledge Music, the main thing that Pledge championed, that their platform allowed, is you to post exclusive content that then became the experience that people were buying into as you made the album.
Right.
So.
Indeed.
But I think Mark still likes us.
I think so. It's funny that he's like, love the show. You guys are... That. Oh, no, he guess he didn't say we were crap. He said
the content was crap. Well.
Can't win them all.
Nope, they're not all hits. Can't win them all. All right, let's move on. By the way, we'll take criticism. If your phone message starts with "you guys are crap," you got my attention.
Right,
you probably make it on the show, unless you're just rude, because we don't have time for that. Let's see. All right, hi Kevin and Chris. I started following your amazing podcast about a month ago, and I have listened to the latest half of all episodes, and I'm still making my way through them. Thanks so much for all the great information you share. I recall an episode when someone had asked about a website called Rocket Songs. I looked into it and I didn't feel comfortable using it for some of the reasons you had indicated. I recently discovered a site called songwritervault.com, and the premise is a bit different. They provide interesting tracks that you can create a song from, and you add your own lyrics and melody, so the chords and beat might be the same as something someone else used. But the melody and lyrics, and they said the copyrightable parts, question mark. So I feel a bit better about that. I was wondering what you thought of that. Would it have the same issues regarding content ID?
Yes, don't do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Any time there's anything that is the exact same thing as another song, it's going to cause content ID problems on YouTube.
And then that's pretty much guaranteed if you're using the entire track but just changing the vocals and lyrics and melody, vocal melody.
Yeah. Most of the content ID fingerprinting happens in the first 30 seconds of the song. So if there is 30 seconds of your song that's identical to another song, it's going to think it's the same song. There is, and that's where at the top of the show I mentioned like some distributors will just let your music sit in conflict. That's some of the mess that we have to go and clean up to make sure your tracks are being properly monetized. But anything like that where there's a chance that someone else is using the exact same thing, it's going to cause problems. It's a huge problem in the hip-hop world where there's sampling, and even if they've cleared the samples or gone to a free beat site or something like that, there's other people doing the exact same thing, and it causes problems. So your best bet is always to create the tracks yourself. Other than that, you could run into problems. Anything that's detecting it, like by a fingerprint, is going to think that they're the same. Mm-hmm. You won't have problems on Spotify or music platforms like that, but you will where things like YouTube and who knows what other technology pops up in the future.
In any sonic fingerprinting thing is probably going to be applied across Facebook and Instagram and
SoundCloud and. So I would stray away from those things. I haven't used any of those services, and I haven't looked at songwritervault.com yet. They may be useful for some things, like if it's you've got a song and it's helping you sort of crystallize the song, and then you can take what you got from there and then re-record your own tracks. That might be interesting. Mm. I'm not saying that's necessarily the best thing to do, but I don't know.
Sorry to have the bummer news. Don't do it.
Yeah, if you go on our Twitter feed, 99% of the people mad at us are people that did something like this,
now they're
put it on YouTube, and it keeps getting claimed erroneously by us or somebody else. Mm-hmm. But it's, and they're like, I got the beat from somebody and they said I could use it royalty free. Yeah, they did that to 10,000 people and they're all doing the exact same thing.
You and 40 other people have the same argument.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it just creates a mess and it limits monetization. So don't do it. All right. That's it.
All right. We're done. And now we go into a 5-hour marketing meeting to plan the future of music distribution.
That's right. That's right. It's good to see your face, Chris.
Thank you. Likewise.
You're looking very summery today.
Yeah, for those who have no idea what he's talking about, which is everyone, I have a Hawaiian shirt on.
I wore a jean jacket thinking I'd be in solidarity with you.
I brought mine. I just left it out at my desk. We're in a podcasting room, which is something we didn't have 10 years ago.
No.
There's a whole room with soundproofing and...
Yeah.
We've come a long way.
We've built an empire.
Speaking of media empires, I finally started listening to Broken Record, podcast. You, Malcolm Gladwell, sure does have a media empire, but I love it. That's a great podcast.
Yeah, that's one of the ones that I highly recommend. It's Broken Record. It's Malcolm Gladwell. If you're not familiar with him, he's written a lot of books. Some of them are marketing centric. Some aren't.
Like social science, layperson social science.
I believe he wrote the book The Tipping Point in marketing.
Outliers.
That in the marketing world gets referenced a lot. But his revisionist history podcast is amazing, but it's not focused on music at all. But the Broken Record one is, it's in conjunction with him and Rick Rubin. But I highly recommend listening to the Rick Rubin episode because that was the one where they talk about Johnny Cash and the covers.
Totally.
And then...
DMC
which played into DMC confirmed in his talk that when it was suggested that Rick Rubin suggested they record Walk This Way, he and Run went and hid in a basement for a week and didn't, they're like, no, we're not gonna do this. Rick Rubin talks about that, and I think it's just, there's some fascinating stuff on that podcast.
Totally. Yeah, the last one I listened to was Tom Petty's Wildflowers. Did you hear that?
I've got that one queued up.
It's good.
It is good.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Everyone listen to the Broken Record. But not before you listen to the DIY Musician podcast.
Oh, come on.
Clearly.
I mean, they knew that. And by the way, again, if you'd like to weigh in, or call our listener line, you can do so at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And yeah, we'll be putting some episodes or sessions from the DIY Musician Conference down the feed coming up, and more goodness to come. So we'll catch you next week.
Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.